very much appreciate the study that you presented, Bill. I had some questions regarding some of the points you made. One of the points that I think was excellent is the fact that in this country at this time, evangelism does not consist of trying to get people into a particular building. As you pointed out, that has worked in the past. Perhaps it works in other places. I think that's one of the things that we cannot get out of the blood or out of the minds of the brotherhood. My question is this: in this country, how should we go about it? In other words, house-to-house studies, use of the mass media, certainly use of individuals contacting other people. Would you comment on that and comment on, and I don't want to get into an area of great controversy, but there was an article that appeared recently that said that if there is a conflict between a house-to-house study and a gospel meeting, that the gospel meeting should always be given first priority. And I'd like you to comment on that concept.
I found, Alfred, that traditions are the hardest thing in the world to change. And I suspect that our system of evangelism, to some extent, has become traditional with us. And I think the only way that we'll ever change it is to change our thinking. We're going to get our hearts centered on something different than what it's centered on. And as I mentioned in my talk, I don't have much patience with people who just condemn a church building, you know, as a lot of our digressive brethren are doing, and a lot of people are doing. But I do think that we need to get away from it. It's just simply not working. You know, we're spending all of our time preaching to our church members, and we're not getting out there. Now, I think one way to do it is for congregations to take the lead in trying to get their membership involved in some kind of personal evangelism. I just haven't been involved in the work in America enough to know the best system to go about that. I can certainly see the need, and it's going to have to be done through the leadership of the churches, it seems to me. Now, your other point was?
My point was that in this article that appeared,
the statement
was made about the conflict.
I don't really know that I could comment on. I don't know that I could settle that situation. They both are important, and I guess I think it would depend on the situation. I don't know. I think personal evangelism is much more effective than our gospel meetings are. But as a preacher, I hate to see people lay out of the meeting.
Problem on my mind, I'm very much in the business of establishing new congregations. And I'm going to an area and work 3 to 5 years, and I tried to develop teachers and get people ready to carry on. But in most of those places, for 20 years now, we still won't have an ordained eldership there. I guess that's being a pessimist, but what are we going to do about that? That's one of the problems. And then number two, when I leave that place, do I continue to bear a particular relationship with that congregation? Would it be the evangelist's responsibility eventually to come back there and try to install elders in that church where he has established that congregation?
Well, I think, to answer your last question first, I think any time that a man establishes a congregation, he always sustains somewhat of a father relationship to that congregation. I think Paul did to all the churches that he established, and that's what he did. He went there and established those churches, and later on he came back and ordained elders. As to how we're going to speed up the system, again, we probably have to change our viewpoints on some things. We're so strict, brethren, to be honest with you, we've been so strict on the qualifications of an elder in some areas that it's just impossible for very many people to qualify for it. And I don't mean to lower the standards, but there's something wrong. Maybe I'm in the wrong area.
Bill, I have two or three things I'd like for you to make a comment on. One thing is that repeatedly, I hear that the comment that you made that the gospel has gone into all the world in a period of about 60 years. And my question is, do you understand that to mean the civilized world, the world of Paul's day, or the entire world? And if so, what evidence do we have that it was talk to the Toltecs, the Mayas, the Incas, and so forth. Another thing I'd like for you to comment on is that the first century we had a different situation than we have now. I understand that we had Judaism and we had a multiplicity of pagan religions. However, they were preaching one Christ with one church that went forth to spread the gospel. Today we might have in the United States of America 2,000 different religious organizations that are preaching the same Christ, so we have a different situation. And the third thing I would like to mention, and it may be coming across to me the wrong way, but it seems to me that every time that I hear mission work mentioned, foreign fields, that it seems that it's a put-down of American people, and it is the United States that is supporting the gospel in a major portion of the world. And those countries, whether they're Africa or Asia or Great Britain, have the same responsibility to spread the gospel into the world as we have. We get back to, probably to the secular belief in the early part of the United States, that manifest destiny, that it is only Americans that have the truth and have the gospel, and it hinges on us and us alone. Now that may come across to me a little bit wrong, differently, but it seems that we're putting down the churches in America, and I'd just like to comment.
Well, to begin with, I think probably the world that Paul's talking about was of his day. You know, basically, the Roman Empire. I really haven't done much study on it. I just kind of taken it face value to it. I don't think it includes, you know, much of the world because it just wasn't. Now, to get to this last question, I hope I didn't imply that there was a put down to the churches in America concerning mission work, because the churches in America are doing a great job. We spend literally thousands of dollars in doing a great work in a lot of countries. I will say this, that the situation that we have in America today is unlike probably any place in the world, with maybe the exception of Europe. We have a populace over here that's just absolutely not interested in first century Christianity. And I'll guarantee you, it's a difficult task to preach the gospel. You can preach the most basic sermon in Africa that will convert hundreds, whereas even church members won't listen to you preach it over here. You know, it is a different situation. I agree with that. But we are obligated to take the gospel where people are accepted. And they're not accepting it here, they're accepting it in third worlds today. And we need to go there. I'm not sure I've answered any questions here.
I appreciate it. I didn't mean that you alone, but that was going on. I appreciate it.
If there's anything that I don't want to do is to put down foreign mission work to the Brotherhood. We're getting involved in it more and more, and there are a lot of... I think we need to be careful, as I mentioned in my lesson. We can't get into some situations. In fact, I think we have. And some of our foreign work, got into some situations that's really very close to an unscriptural system, but we're doing more and more all the time. And a lot of young people are becoming interested in it and trying to train them and things like that.
Sure. My question follows along with what you're talking about. Bill, I would like to have your comment about, you have done evangelistic work in the United States, though it's been several years that you've done it for a long period of time, and you've been overseas. Do you think that there is a difference in the pressure that is placed on a person who's an evangelist in this country and perhaps as a quote-unquote missionary overseas? And I might just say that it seems to me that there is sometimes undue pressure placed on preachers in this country to produce results. And maybe we just cannot, for the reasons you've mentioned, in places produce the results that are produced in other places. And a preacher, I know personally, I've been in places where the field was more fertile, and I baptized several people, and then I would go to another place, another church, and work as hard, if not harder, and not have many, if any, results. And I think maybe the brethren don't expressly put this pressure on me, but I feel the pressure. I need to produce. Or the brethren are going to think I'm not doing my job.
Well, you're right. My hair is hit.
Where do you think this started?
Can I say one more thing? Sort of on the same line. When we think about the Bible pattern for evangelism, we think about Paul and Barnabas and Silas going out on these missionary journeys. They would go into a place, a city, and if the field was fertile, if there were people there that would listen, they would stay. But if not, they went somewhere else. I'm afraid sometimes that when a congregation sends an evangelist into an area, we want him to stay there until there's a church established. And if he doesn't establish a church, and if he can't baptize 10 people in the first year, we fire him and get somebody else and send him over there. I say fire him. We cut off his support. We say, well, he's no good. He's not a good preacher. Let's get another preacher who can do a better job. He'll convert some people down there. And maybe it's not the preacher. It's the area sometimes, perhaps.
You know, preaching in America is so much more difficult than it is in third world countries. We're so educated. We know so much. We're so dignified. Our audiences are so entertained that a preacher has to have not only a sermon, he's got to have a song and dance, you know, to just keep his audience listening. And if you're not a good song and dance man, that puts gray hairs in your head. Starting churches. It's not just a matter of just going out and preaching something. Or staying in an area.
I'd like to comment on some of the things that Ted brought up. First of all, as you have said, I cannot imagine it to be a put down for us to be interested in foreign fields. I regard that as an honor and a glory that we're in a position to do it. We are the wealthiest nation that has ever existed and that exists at this present time and may ever exist. We have resources at our disposal that no one else in this world has ever had. And I think we need to look at that rather than something that we ought to try to utilize for our own pleasure, more toward what can we do with it, what can we do with this very unique situation we have to help some other people. You know, one man one time said that everyone has the right to hear the gospel once more than everybody else has to hear it twice, or that others have to hear it twice. And, you know, even though we've heard that statement, I think that it definitely rings true. You know, you pointed out something that, in a way, is somewhat of an answer to that, and that is that many of the preachers in Africa are going about to do that. They're doing within their ability to spread the gospel, establishing congregations. So we're not trying to create a system in which we do all the work and they just kind of sit there, but we're trying to create a situation in which we give them the knowledge, perhaps some assistance, so that they can then take this message to the people. One final thought I'd like to present is the fact that Jesus taught there are four types of ground. He taught there's good ground, stony ground, thorny ground, wayside ground. The thing he didn't teach, but the thing I think is often inferred, is that there's an equal percentage of each type of ground in every place. That is not taught. He did not say there's 25% good ground in every place. But as a matter of fact, he indicated that in some places there's very little good ground. In the limited commission, he says you'll go to places, they won't hear you. He says shake the dust off your feet. In other words, almost no good ground there. So there's no indication that there's equal good ground in every place. And in this country, the good ground, in my opinion, and I think the evidence bears it out, is diminishing
rapidly, and it seems to continue to do so. And in other places, there seems to be a great percentage of good ground. I think we need to take that into account when we start thinking about where we need to concentrate some of our efforts in preaching the gospel.
Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate it.
Mine is part of what Alfred started out on. America has the material means that parts of the rest of the world do not have at all. But if we're not reaching America, and I think that's what Ted probably means about the put down all the time, how we're not, you know, we can get so much of we're not until it gets to where, well, are we not doing anything, you know, but where it might come across that way. But if we're not reaching America, and there are far too few bright spots in America, we'll just face it. Churches are that we're doing any good. But then we will die out, you know. And then the tables will be turned. These nations with the 700 churches, Africa's going to have to worry about evangelizing a country that doesn't have any churches. But, and I mentioned this to the Mexican brethren last year in a study at Oklahoma City in private, that we don't know how to approach materialism in America. I don't know all of our responsibilities toward them, but they have the same responsibility towards India. And they said, oh yes, Indians are far poorer than we are in Mexico. Somehow they're going to have to be looking elsewhere. But the church is all sufficient, and I salute you, as Don McCord would say, on the churches in Africa being self-supporting. The churches, the Bible teaches that the church is self-sufficient, and if it's not self-sufficient in a country, I say something's wrong if it doesn't get to be that way or working toward that. But Bill, perhaps you don't know it, but attitudes are, and I appreciate what you said, attitudes are changing here in this country over evangelists locating in a congregation with existing elders. I mean, it's changing bad and not in agreement with what you're saying that it's changing. It's changing the other way.
You mean churches and elders are getting preachers
and elders? And preachers' attitudes about going with their elders.
Well, that's an unscriptural system, obviously. You talk about the work in foreign countries being self-sufficient. I don't suppose it will ever be self-sufficient. I mean, a Malawian, an average Malawian makes, out in the village where our work is, makes maybe, at the most, $50 a year. Now, you can't do a very big work, you know, materially on that. But we make a mistake in any foreign country when we start funneling money into a society like that, that's used to that type of system, the ones who get that money, it puts them in a position that it destroys them, and it destroys our work, and I would discourage it.
Amen.
I discourage it very much in a certain area which we're in today. It's pretty well ruined.
Jack?
Well, I've never been overseas, but I've done some work in the States. And what probably has been most discouraging to me is that when I first started out many years ago, my ambition wasn't to be necessarily a pulpit preacher, but I wanted to do personal work, personal evangelism. And after a period of time, I've become very successful at that, and then later on emphasized the pulpit aspect of it. But one of the hardest and most difficult things that I have seen in my lifetime is to go into a congregation and then motivate that congregation to do the same thing that I've been doing. It's virtually almost an impossibility. And the only ones that I've ever been able to train to come even close to doing the kind of work that I feel like is evangelistic work are those that I converted out of the world. It just seems to me like, over the years, that our system of things, that we're pulpit-oriented. And I can hold sessions individually with members of the congregations where I'm at, and I can get them out. If I teach public speaking, I can get all the boys down. I can get a lot of them down. And they'll work with me. And we, and in most places, I've been able to develop public teachers in every congregation that I've ever been in. But I've been very unsuccessful. And this is the area I feel that I'm the strongest, probably have the best gift, your God-given gift, in that way than any other gift that I have. But I just don't know why that when I'll be teaching public speaking, then switch it over and say, now next week, I'm going to start talking about personal evangelism. And I can guarantee about the second night, there won't be a handful there. Two or three. It's discouraging. I have reached a point where I just about quit even trying to encourage you. And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I should still continue it. But I'd rather just get out and do my little old thing, my little old way. And because I see the futileness of trying to get somebody else to do it. Now, it could be that I've been wrong in my observation, and that is maybe not everybody is gifted as somebody else is. It could be the system. But there is something wrong. And I reflect on it a little bit like this. I believe that every home ought to be a Bible class. And that's the reason I believe the Lord system is better than the class method system, the public school, where somebody else teaches our children. Mothers and fathers should teach their children and neighbors' children. But how many homes really do that? How many homes are really orphans, homes like we talked this morning? That's the actual desired plan. That's what the plan is. But how many of us and how many are really incorporating that plan? Ever a home of Bible class and studying the Bible every day? It's almost unheard of. It's the same way in evangelism. But I think we're making headway. Through it all, and the dismal feelings that I have, and there as I'm most frustrated, we're making headway in the way of eldership. I can name this congregation has put in elders and deacons. Not too long before, even 21st Street, Joplin's put in elders. They're all Bible qualified elders, in my estimation. Houston, Missouri put in elders. Lisa put in elders. So we are making progress. If we could just do that personal evangelism,
I think the qualified leadership across the brotherhood, and with a brotherhood that recognizes those qualified leaders, they could probably do a lot to remedy even the personal evangelistic part of it. But Jack, I agree with you that I think the church in America today looks better than it has in the last years that I've been here. When I came home in 79, I was so discouraged with the church. I couldn't wait to get back to Africa. We had the dullest singing, the dullest preaching that I've ever heard in my life, and the most negative attitude about the church. But since I've come back this time, I find that that's changed. And I find it particularly among certain young people that there's a great deal more spirituality and there's a great deal more interest in things spiritual. So, actually, I know how discouraging it is. And the average congregation across America today probably doesn't have over one or two. The strongest doesn't have over three or four people in it who can do personal work. That's discouraging. But I think there's a lot of things to come. I believe we're going to improve on that.
Ted? I didn't expect to get up here the second time tonight, but I believe that Alfred and you too have misunderstood what I meant by put down. And I think you've illustrated just then what I was talking about. We are expecting America to evangelize the world, and then you tell us that we have the dullest singing, the dullest preaching. That's what I was talking about, a put down. If the men who are wanting us to send the gospel to the world to come back and give us the encouragement and say what a great work it is and what a great work that you're doing in America, you might find that there would be greater results. But that's what I was talking about, the put down, is that we're doing a great work over there, but you people are not doing anything here in supporting that work, and yet we are sending the money and sending the men there. And I don't want you to think I'm putting you men down. I admire you, and I admire you in the work that you're doing, but I think you misunderstood the put down. I hope I clarified it a little bit. I'm not sure.
Well, let me clarify that I said that's not all singing Bill Christmas out was 6 or 7 years ago.
Bill, I think you've done a wonderful job, and I freely confess my ignorance, and I think many brethren are ignorant of what is the best approach in a foreign field. And I think men like you and Ron and James and Jerry and others who have been there are in a position to guide us. You know, brethren in America have always been, I think, willing to spend and be spent for a foreign work. Maybe even at times we go overboard, and in our effort to do something that is good and lasting, we do it in the wrong way and maybe ruin it and jeopardize it in the process because we don't understand how best the work should be carried on. And you fellows have insight into situations like that that we don't. And I think you need to be very vocal about, for example, the fact that sending money to preachers in a foreign country and elevating them to a standard of living above their own fellows perhaps sabotages the work. Now, I'm very concerned that we sometimes tolerate in situations like that things that we would not tolerate in other areas. And this little diagram that you drew on the board, I think, is an excellent example of that. And without being specific, I periodically receive a report of a foreign work where obviously there is some kind of fund out of which certain preachers' expenses are paid or certain sick people are cared for. I don't know who's over the fund. I don't know who oversees it. I don't know where it's kept. I don't know what it is. But I know if I took those liberties in matters of worship, I'd be dealt with immediately. And it seems to me that brethren need to be aware of the fact that we can, in doing a good work, do unscriptural things. And we really need to clean up our act in that respect.
Amen.
That's correct. I don't really know the details of this particular thing that you're talking about, this work you're talking about. But on the surface, I agree, it looks very, very much like that. It's not scriptural. Now, I understand that I've talked to some of the brethren who are involved in some of that work, and I think they're in the process of correcting it. And that's exactly what needs to be done. What worries me a lot about that thing that you get is that you've got dozens of preachers on that thing that's getting money, and they're getting it, I suppose, in a scriptural way. And I guarantee you that it's costing a small fortune to carry on a relatively small work. That, to me, is a very bad trend. You know, in the law, there's only about $500 a month goes into that work. We've got 40,000 church members in that country, 125 preachers, and only $400 or $500 from America is not very much. So, Ted, there's not much of a put down, you know, because there's not that much going into it. But I'll just say also, Ronnie, the churches in America, if you can show the brethren that it's a good work and it's a legitimate scriptural work, they'll get behind it. They've always been in Africa.
I've got three more questions on the list, and I'm going to stop at that because of our time. Elton, Johnny, and Art.
Bill, I've just got one point. I wanted to ask you what you feel about doing your list of work. Preachers going by twos in the areas, even in this country. Over a space of some 2 years, Bobby Pepper and I have worked together. We held 13 mission-type meetings. I'm talking about where the gospel had not been preached. We have no congregation there. In fact, what we did, we put out a little journal that went into about every home in a 5-state area, encouraging leads, no matter where they come or how significant they might be. We followed up on every lead that was submitted to us now. Madame Croon and some others up Tennessee, they did the same thing. But what I'm asking, what is your opinion about going into those areas by twos? Are they any positive effect better than just going single-handed?
Well, I think in America, it's much better to go by twos because you have so much, you know, negative output from what you're working with. It's pretty discouraging to go by one, but it doesn't have to be done that way. Now, some people get the idea that it just really ought to be by twos. If that's the case, I've been doing a bunch of work for the last 12 years because I've been to myself.
Well, in no way am I trying to put down what you did there.
Well, I know you're not, but I'm just using it as an illustration. It can be done either way, and probably in America, I'd say that that's probably the best.
The type that was in the scriptures, usually they did, set out 70 of the apostles.
But certainly they didn't all of us, you know. I mean, it could be done better.
How could one man, though, do that kind of work?
Which kind of work are you talking about?
To go into areas where there's no church and hold meetings at the time.
You mean
in America? In an endeavor to either establish a church, convert new people, and then suggest they go to other places. You've got to have. Sometimes you run pretty thin as to who you've got to preach to try to convert your preaching brother with you. But, I just wanted to come in on that.
Well, I don't really know that I'm qualified to answer it. I just really haven't been in a world here enough. I know years ago I went to New Orleans, Louisiana. I would never go myself. Walked up down the streets by myself and started going to church.
I do want to say this, that I travel across the country like a lot of my preachers do, just about 12 months out of the year. And I can see a growth in the church, in maturity, and in spirituality in every way. We have got a group of young men coming on now with ability and education and ambition. This is even true back down in the Deep South. In congregations where so long every little congregation would do their own thing, but we've got young men rising now, taking leading roles where they've never done so before. I think it's just a great thing.
Well, Ronnie essentially stated or asked my question. It's hard to believe, but I guess I'm one of the oldest members of the church in Oklahoma here tonight. Some years ago in Oklahoma, when I was just a young man, just a boy, we had a program similar to that up there. We had one man in charge of a fund. All the churches in Oklahoma would send that man money. And out of that fund, he would pay. I think at one time we had two or three preachers working. It did a lot of good. And so, you know, from the standpoint of good, we did good. But brethren rose up and said, well, that's unscriptural. And it was some degree of hurt feelings that was overcome. There was another unscriptural thing that developed, and it's so easy to slip into the... back in the first days of the 4th of July meeting at Sulphur, one day we all met under the tabernacle. Different preachers were proposed to hold the meeting the next year, and all of us voted on it. We were selecting the preachers for the church at Sulphur. And this was pointed out by one of the brethren, and we quit that. And again, there were some hurt feelings. But you know, if we have a system that's unscriptural, that's opposed to the Bible pattern, it's not right to continue that thing. I don't care if it is in a foreign country. And no matter if it is doing good, and something that wouldn't be tolerated in this country ought not to be tolerated over there. Now, let me ask you another question. This is a question I want to get to. I believe that every church is capable of functioning in evangelism by itself, ought to be. In other words, I don't believe it has to
you have to have the church universal in order to do mission work or evangelistic work. And so every church is capable, to the extent that it's able, it's responsible for that. If it's not able to get all over the world, it's not responsible for that job. Now, how would you like to have charge of a fund, in addition to all your duties over there in Africa, of $100,000, maybe $50,000 or $100,000 a year at your disposal? Would you like to be responsible for that?
Well, that was probably getting the ulcer for that.
I was going to say, the comments that were made about, you know, the decline in interest in America, you know, I think that from the lesson you brought out, Bill, you mentioned and touched on the fact of the personal nature with which each of the congregations approached evangelism. Do you think that some of the decline is because that we've become a lot more impersonal, especially in associated with the churches and the different congregations, where, you know, we are very impersonal a lot of times on our job. We go about carrying out our duties, and we neglect a lot of the personal opportunities that we have. Do you see that as being one of the causes of that decline?
Indeed, I do. I'll tell you one of the. When you leave a country and stay gone for many years, you can see changes, you know, when you get back. You have this cultural shock. And I think one of the biggest shocks that I have in the church is the fact that as individual Christians, as a church as a whole, we're a more distant people from one another than we have ever been. We simply do not have the fellowship with one another. We can't talk to one another about the church and about Christ. And I guarantee you, if we can't talk to each other about it, we're not going to go out here and talk to somebody else. So I think that's very much one of our problems.
I really appreciate that point, because, you know, when we think of Acts 8 and 6 and about, you know, Philip, when the disciples were scattered abroad, it says that how they went everywhere preaching, they had a genuine interest, not only in the preaching and teaching, but they still continued with one another and in assembling together in their efforts in teaching each other and the world. And I think that's, you know, one thing that sometimes we neglect to remember, and sometimes we can be in a congregation and not even know anything about our brothers and sisters that we see every week.
That's true.
Do you have any kind of comment on that?
Oh, I'm tired.
Well, Bill Davis and I were friends. Put a charge or two on me, I almost feel the right to respond. Bill, if you remember in August of 1973, that banker, that car that broke down there started most of this, right? We really appreciate Bill's presentation tonight. You'd have a hard time finding some place to have a better evening than what you've had right here. We appreciate it. We always appreciate the wonderful message of the gospel, and I guess with special gratitude, we're glad to hear from the voice of you, Bill. Thank you.
Amen.
Bill and his family, you know, they've tread the dusty as of Africa since, I guess, July or August of 73. And appreciate a man that's got the message and a man and a family who is a message. We've had a fantastic day. The subjects have been well presented. Brethren have worked hard in their presentation. As an audience, you've conducted yourself well. The elders here and the brethren here at this congregation have just prepared so well for this meeting. Sisters have continued to take care of our dining needs so sufficiently. Hospitality expressed, and for all these things, we're just very, very thankful. Very, very appreciative.
You know, it's a nice situation when you're kind of trying to help supervise and direct things, and you can be just inconspicuous because people are prepared and taking care of things so well. There are a couple announcements that we need to make before we